Welcome to the Link Network Readiness Assessment. I'm with Tom Foreman.
And I'm with Brian Ricks.
And we are going to be discussing today the modeling phase. And in this module, we are going to have three different lessons that we go over. We have performing usage, performing traffic, and the link bandwidth calculator, the largest of them being the link bandwidth calculator, where we go over what it is. So with this module, we do have expectations that the people listening and participating in this module do have core knowledge of Microsoft Link. It makes it very hard to kind of plan for and design a network solution for Link if you don't understand Link. So that's highly important, as well as base information on networking and voice communications, PBXs. There are suggested information that you kind of need to look after and consider in order to make your life easier. One of them is the Link Server Networking Guide, and there's two versions. Obviously, V2 is what we want to be looking at. Came out at the end of last year. That guide goes into basically what the entire course was built off of, and the exam as well. So understanding and knowing that particular document will do you huge strides and favors. And then finally, the link to the exam itself is included as well within this course. When we go to look at performing a usage modeling, there are data points that need to be gathered. And most of these data points are going to be ones that we have consumed and gathered and documented from the previous phase and that of the documentation phase, right? So we have data gathering followed by modeling, followed by simulations, followed by recommendations. So on the second phase where we're at with the modeling, it's important that we have the information that's needed in order to make this happen. We also need to make sure that we understand how the tools are going to work that we're going to plug this information into, which is the bandwidth calculator. So if we don't know where we're trying to get and understand what the bandwidth calculator is looking for, it's hard to create and build really the solution that we're trying to create and build for the client or for our internal customer. It's all about understanding the various information, the various knowledge, the various data gathering points in order to get the result that we're looking for when we plug it into the actual monitor itself. So for the model, what are we looking for? What kind of information are we looking for? There are everything from physical locations and sites to the number of users at a site to how that site is connected to another site. And all these sites and how this information comes back will determine the link design. And really at this point, in order for the link bandwidth monitor to kind of work, we have to have some idea of where the link topology is going to be placed. It can obviously vary, and we may start it in one location, add or remove location sites as things go along based off network bandwidth and really business requirements that are driving this. But if we don't know what the network is and what the uses are of the people, then it's hard to figure out how we can plug this in to the monitor itself.
The calculator.
The calculator will determine the bandwidth utilized, but only if we know what we are utilizing, right? If we don't know what type of communications are going to be modeled, we don't know what type of usage patterns there are going to be, and the number of people that are following the usage patterns, then the complete usage of data is completely irrelevant because it's wrong. It has to be accurate.
And you can't do your simulations and you can't make your recommendations. So.
Right. Everything is dependent upon one another in this from a phasing perspective, where if phase one is incorrect or all the data is not gathered correctly, then the output from phase one is the input to phase two, and the output of phase two is the input to phase three, and so on and so forth. So, and actually the last phase is the input from all the phases, the output from all the phases. So really, it's key that we get all this right from the start. And if we don't get it right from the start, then everything is inaccurate. Nothing is actually what we want it to be. So with that, we go off and jump into our personas. Now, a persona, by definition, Microsoft definition, is a configuration or a delineation that you have configured within the bandwidth calculator that determines kind of what users exist, right? A persona is going to be the secretaries speak 60% of the time, always internally, and it's always peer-to-peer calls, whereas the executives are on the phone rarely, but when they do, they're in massive conference calls. remote workers that we may have, and their definition that they are all the time remote, rarely in the office.
Internal sales might be on the phone
all the
85% of the time.
And then you get the extremes like a help desk that is all they do, is they take calls. And they may be actually something that's out of scope of the Link solution at the moment. Maybe it's something that is phase two or phase three of the deployment, because it is specifically a voice-required solution with high numbers and beyond network expectations of anything else that they're looking at. So it's taking all of those user types to a limit. We don't want to get so granular that we're overwhelmed. In fact, the tool really supports three per site. So while you can have and define 10 personas, the idea is to have the different personas if they're at different sites. But really, you're down to three types. And while that may sound a little limiting, really it just comes down to trying to figure out, in generality, what three categories of users do we have. And it can be simply low, medium, and high users. It can be no users. Guests that come in may not really be using RTC at all, but they may be on the network physically, so they would be a none category. Capturing the number of users, capturing all that information, that's what's important. Getting that information into our site diagram, as we'll get to see a little bit further.
And then divvying them up by amount of users. If you have like a low, medium, high, how many are low, how many are medium, how many are high, that way when you go plug it into the calculator, it can do its calculation correctly and determine the bandwidth usage. Yep. And the bandwidth calculator is very important for the exam. You'll need to know it inside out, and we'll have a good demo later that will hopefully
explain some of it and how it works and how it interacts with one itself. Because really, it's understanding and playing with the tool to just see how a change in one field impacts or reflects in another field, and how it actually means what it means and what the colors represent and things of that nature. So when we're looking at stuff that's going to go into our usage modeling, and when we're looking at stuff that's going into our personas, we need to look at all the information on the site, that the data that we've gathered. There may or may not be data down to like call records. So depending on the PBX you have today, depending on the PBX solution you have today, it's very possible that you don't have a CDR database to actually, or historical CDR database to go back to. A great example of that would be, we've gone to locations that are completely cellular today. They don't have an internal phone system, and now their desire is to put a link and actually have an internal corporate PBX solution and reduce cellular minutes. But that means every account is an outside cellular account, and there is no big database of what's going on in the network and knowing who's talking to who. So you may not have information. It also could be that it was an option on your legacy PBX that you had that was never purchased or never implemented. Maybe you had it but was never set up. All of these things may come into play when we go to look at information that's being physically deployed to us and gathered for us and then brought into our modeling phase. Some of the simple things may be just looking at your current PRIs or the current number of voice channels that are associated per site. It may be overkill. It may be overutilized. It may be underutilized. We don't know, but starting there, you know, you have at least what you had before. So a good example would be a remote location has a partial T and has a channel distribution of 12 channels that they physically have. So they can have 12 concurrent calls. We may have another location that's small and has four POTS lines that roll over to one another. Well, we know at that location, if we can get them at least four concurrent calls, we have matched what they have today. We're not reducing functionality. It's also possible, and a good example would be, is that at a higher learning education deployment, where their PRI count when I went in, their total number of channels was over 150 channels. Yet as we were working things out, we never hit above somewhere around the 60 to 65. So they had oversubscribed double the amount of information they needed or more than from a actual cost perspective. So just figuring out what we have, taking that information, and then kind of turning it on its back to figure out what we could do and make sure what we are proposing matches that. If our physical network, to further go on that, if our physical network could only support a megabit worth of data, and yet we have a full T1 or 23 channels in the US on that, can we support that same 23 channels on that 1 megabit? No. Right, so we can't support it based off our network that we have today. So looking at that information, and that's how we're going to validate the information that we need to include.
And you've already gathered all of this during the discovery phase.
Or should
have. You should have. And you might need to go back. You've done that discovery phase. Now you're doing your modeling. something doesn't line up, you might need to go back and redo some more discovery and then come back to your modeling.
Yep. When we take that data, so the stuff that we've gathered during the data collection phase, and move that into our modeling phase, we're now looking at how do we apply that to link. One of the key concepts to remember when we're looking at link is it is probably a bigger, more robust, more featureful solution than what you have today. And so it could also be multiple external or internal applications all rolled up now into those single link solutions. So we may be looking at information from all different sources, but figuring out this information is what's key to figuring out, can we actually get the call flows and the amount of concurrent utilization really narrowed and pinned down? The big hurdle that we sometimes see is this conferencing piece. In link, conferencing is any more than two people in any type of modality, right? So if you have having a three-way IM conversation, or a 10-way, or a 50-way, to us, it's all conferencing. The way the data flows is identical. So that's what's important, is the way that we're impacting the physical network. So from a conferencing perspective, when we're talking audio conferencing, it's figuring out how many calls do we have today? How many users are in those calls, and how big are those meetings? Because then we can figure out what our concurrency and our sizing and our requirements are for these actual conferencing solutions. We don't get that information. If we don't accurately gather it, there's no way for us to really know what's the what. And sometimes it's just gathering the bills, gathering the information, and just doing basic math and breaking it down by number of users at the site or number of users that actually call. We have X amount of minutes divided by 50 users. And while we don't know necessarily how many people called in, we can kind of just extrapolate some information. So that level of information is better than no information or guessing. So really, it's just gathering info and all about the discovery phase of getting this information to make the modeling phase be an accurate phase.
You take that data you've collected and then create these models that this group of people have this amount of conferences that happens this many users this many times a day for about this much time,
right?
Each meeting.
And that's exactly what our next slide goes into, right? That's talking about the bandwidth calculator usage, figuring out the maximum concurrencies of what? Of IM, of peer-to-peer video, of conferencing video, of peer-to-peer audio, conferencing audio, data sharing, all the different modalities, all the functions and the coolness of link. Now trying to figure out what's the maximum concurrency that we have based off the percentage of the actual users. So while we may have 100 users, at any one time, 10% are going to be in instant messages based off of our data gathering. At any one time, we're going to expect to have 8 or 10 of those 100 people, so again, 10%, that may be on a conference call with nobody internally, all external calls in. And so knowing those numbers and gathering this information is how we build off the bandwidth calculator. So looking at the bandwidth calculator, we can base it off the information that goes into the planning tool, right? So the planning tool is a starting point where when we're figuring out how is this network link design going to be deployed, we can take information that's going to go into the bandwidth calculator, take the information that we gathered in discovery, and all that's the same information that would then go into the planning tool. So with the planning tool, we can figure out what the recommended design of our link solution would be based off of business requirements. And that's key. Many times I have individuals say, how big of a link deployment do I need for 20,000 users, 2,000 users, 500 users? And that's the most open-ended, worst question you can ask. It's like, well, that depends. What features do they want?
How much do you use those features?
How much are they going to be requiring high availability? Do they have a DR site? Is an active DR solution required? Are the features important that they all need to be highly available? A good example would be if they wanted to use the WAX server. Do PowerPoint presentations need to be highly available? If that was to go down, would that be the end of the world? If it's not, then maybe a single solution or server would be the solution there, yet everything else is highly available. I mean, there's so many variables, but until you get the business requirements and the discovery information we have from our first phase of the network assessment, we can't really plug any of that into the planning tool. And from the planning tool, its importance is it gives us the recommended topology.
Number of servers,
number of sites, all of that information that we're going to have to take and plug then into the actual bandwidth calculator. So highly important. Is it required? No. It's a great tool, in my opinion, for validating your your thoughts. So I will go ahead and design something based off the discovery phase and then kind of plug it into the planning tool and say, what do you say? If the planning tool is less or fewer servers than what I determined, then that's a flag for me. If it's a little bit more, it's kind of expected. Microsoft errs on the side of too much rather than too little. But if nothing else, it's a validated tool to figure out what is our environment and how are things going. Okay. So when we go to perform our traffic modeling, we have to figure out what kind of communications we have. Not only what kind of communications, the codecs and the bandwidth types are all going to come into play. So for obvious logic, if we have or only plan to support video that is in a 1280 by 800 resolution, then we can, in theory, get it down to 384K. But if that's not the requirement, if in fact we want something that is much higher, so we want 1920 by 1200, then we may be up to a 3.5 megabit for awesome frame rate and video quality and pixelation, minimalization and ghosting and things of that nature. But that also means we're going to need 3.5 megabits for that pipe to happen. Whereas conversely, we can get 10 of those video calls in if we were at the 1280 by 800 at acceptable quality. So it comes back to business requirements, right? It all comes back to what ifs and is the data gathered. And part of our discovery phase is exactly that. We have to figure out what is it the business needs, what is the actual business requirements, and then take those drivers to design the correct link solution, which will lead to the bandwidth requirements. In the end, if the business has true hardline requirements for what they need the link application to do, then the network assessment will tell them exactly what they have to do, and there's no question. Either they're fine, or they're going to have to upgrade things, or things are going to have to change architecturally. Something's going to have to happen if that is a true requirement. In my experience, what starts as a true requirement ends up being what? We have to do what to our network? It's going to cost me how much? Well, we don't want that anymore. And instead of being that we're going to require 1920 by 1200 video, all of a sudden we'll take half SIF. We'll blow that down all the way to 60 kilobits of data per call because we're just not going to support high res or high quality video.
Or even differentiate it with policies for different usages, different personas.
Right. So the types of user traffic, the types of information that we generate, the types of modeling that we focus on is going to depend on the types of traffic particular users are generating. So perhaps they are only focused on, and maybe we're only important with peer-to-peer audio internally. Maybe that's really all that matters from Link today. We're not tying it into our PSTN. We're not tying it into conferencing. We're not doing anything of that nature. Well, if that's the case, then we need to focus our design on supporting a peer-to-peer solution. And we don't really need to look at everything else. It's also possible that all of that is out the door because really all we're using this for is desktop sharing. We don't want any audio. We don't want any video. We're not planning to do anything but desktop sharing. If that's the case, well, then maybe we just need to focus on the desktop sharing application. Now, obviously, if you have desktop sharing, that means you have SIP signaling that's going on because you're always going to have SIP, which is extremely minimal, right? But your presence and your IMMP is going to be there as well. All of that's going to be enabled, but the actual focus of the design will be centered around whatever it is that's the business driver. And that's really what the key to all of this is figuring out what the business drivers are and then gathering the data and modeling the data and simulating the data and then recommending any changes to the infrastructure based off those requirements, company requirements.
And sometimes customers deploy it just for the conferencing abilities. And even Microsoft has documentation where that's usually where you can make your return on investment just from that.
Yeah, it's not uncommon that we will start with an IMMP solution and a small POC. And one of the easiest wins in a company to that point is that we'll say, let's tie in a single phone number to the Link world. However that method may be, whether it be through a session border controller or maybe directly off your IP PBX, maybe a trunk, whatever the case may be, and just tie it into conferencing. And all of a sudden your client's eyes or your internal IT or whoever happens to be your client, eyes will light up as they just got a conference bridge. Now, Most immediately glaze over the fact that there are inherent costs to having a conference bridge, because now you are taking on the data. Your servers are managing those calls. You are the person doing the bridging. So there, you know, things shift, but typically, to your point, ROI can be quickly gained because the cost of external providers is so high compared to what you can get internally from a data solution and connection perspective, from internet and whatnot. But looking beyond conferencing and looking at those data communications, we also have to think about what other bandwidth requirements exist. What are the typical bandwidth solutions that we're going to need whenever we're trying to model things out? Now, memorizing this information isn't key. Knowing, generally speaking, that a conferencing voice will cost more than a peer-to-peer voice, that's important. Knowing, in general, that there are different types of video quality that we can get are important. Knowing that there's different audio codecs for voice, that's important. But again, the actual numbers, it's great to know, and it makes you sound really smart when you're talking to somebody, but not necessarily required, especially when you have OneNote, you pull it out, you just have your list when you're building your recommendations and you're modeling this stuff, right? So it's not going to be a hard requirement to memorize this. And from the exam perspective, it's going to be provided in tables for you, so you don't have to memorize it. But you do need to be familiar with the concepts that things escalate up based off the quality and based off of the modality. So desktop sharing, full screen on an HD monitor is going to cost a lot of network traffic compared to instant messaging and presence, IMP. Okay? When we look at audio codecs, some of the common ones we talk about are things like RT audio, RTA. So RT audio, wideband and narrowband are what our clients want to talk when we're talking link to link and when we're talking communications. And we could see in general, hey, wait, that typically that's tiny, that's awesome. And we can even throw it down to RT audio narrowband, which the quality is not great. Now we're kind of like traditional PSTN or PBX type communication. But it does take more or less 10 kilobits less of information. So that may be a good thing. When we look at maximum bandwidth, we almost never want to size or model based off maximum. Maximum is going to assume high levels of packet loss and thus error corrections on. And if our network is as such, yes, we're going to use those numbers, but in general, where the expectation is that your network is managed and controlled, and so we don't have this problem. So maximum is with all of the error corrections and retries on and things of that nature, whereas typical is the average. And we say average because, remember, with link, if we're not talking, we're not transmitting data. So if we're just listening, it's a one-way stream coming in. When we start to talk, data is generated out. You know, often we go, and so whenever there's white noise or video and video is not changing or desktop sharing and it's a static screen because we're waiting, you can watch your network and it just drops. And then as soon as someone starts to move something around on the desktop, all of a sudden we're getting video redraw and network utilization goes up. So that's where we're getting this average, the typical bandwidth comes from.
And these are already in the link bandwidth calculator. When you put in your different modalities and the different usages per persona, it'll do this calculation for you. And you can even select different types of codecs that you want to be used.
Correct. The video codec, what we use, when we use from a video, is just like audio. There's no real difference. It's just another table that we have of different types of codecs. And the resolutions. The big difference is instead of having, is it wideband or narrowband, and really from a voice perspective, that's your quality. Now we have what's our frame rate and what's our max resolution. And those kind of things are going to impact what our costs of the video frames are. Now, again, we look at H.264 and we're looking at a tiny little bandwidth of a half SIF or a 320 by 180 or 212 by 160. And we're looking at that. You can see we can get down to 15 kilobits. Almost no impact to have that little video stream. Now, the video's tiny, its quality is really poor, but it's possible if not much is changing, we're just kind of keeping it alive and we just have our protocols to keep things up and not really any video changes. But then we can also look, as we go up the scale, and look at H.264. And as we go up the scale to 16 by 9 HD, all of a sudden we're at 4 megabits. Huh, max. And then we look at our typical 3.2. Well, that's a big deal on your network to realize. Not only does the PC have to be able to handle it, because it's got to be able to churn this data that's coming in, so there's the impact there, But you also have network impact. We have all of the impact that is going to happen just from base communication of your PC receiving this data stream and sending your data stream. And then dealing with all the communications that happen in between, because in addition to video, more than likely, audio is going on in the background, and maybe even a desktop or PowerPoint sharing is going on too.
And where the conferencing server is located as well.
And overall, we say somewhere around, hey, your worst case could be 8 megabits per participant in a physical conference. And even worse, especially if we have HD multi-video going on and you've blown up multiple screens and you've got all kinds of pinned contacts and
something that
it can get
a user doesn't even consider, really.
Right.
This is how I like my conferences.
And really important is no policies, like Tom mentioned, is how we control this. We minimize it. We reduce it by just reducing their capabilities of the participants when required. It's not uncommon that on the local network segment or the local location of where the data center is / users are, the corporate office typically, if they're located where the link servers are, well, there's no restrictions. Let it go, because we're all on typically a gig backplane from a client level back to the server. So let it fly. Let's have all the functionality. As soon as you leave the main site, well, now all of a sudden we have to restrict things.
Especially if you're spreading continents.
Exactly. So our endpoints. When we talk about, are we actually going to be looking at how communications happen, we have to think about, is it a peer-to-peer call? Is it a conferencing call? And when we say call, that could be a video call, audio call. That could be data and application sharing. All of this information has to be considered, not only from how the communication is going to flow, so your network impact, but also averages of those data flows, all again based off of, if you're not talking, we're not sending. And that's important to conceptualize, because you as a participant of a conference have the ability to mute the audience. You mute the audience, all of a sudden you've killed all the network traffic that would potentially be flowing, because there's nobody's audio but yours. If you pin and force the video to be just your video and override everybody else's video, well, now you just forced a single video stream down to everybody. So now a lot of the network considerations or concerns are kind of just washed away, because now we have a single audio stream, a single video stream, everybody's receiving it. It's a town hall type experience, not necessarily what you want, not very collaborative, but...
And again, not something that the user is really even thinking about. They don't really care about the network back end. This is how they want their meetings. You got to plan your modeling based on how you've done your usages and your personas.
Right. And that goes back to the last point of, it's not uncommon that by policy, we will say multi-view is off for particular users or set of users because of their geographical location, or because they're outside the network, or because they're remote, we don't want them on, or whatever the case may be. But that's all part of our planning process and trying to figure it out. Again, that's dictated by business requirements. The end result may be that these are the policies that you're going to recommend, because business, the actual network can't handle what the business wants. It's not uncommon that they want more than what they can afford.
Or sometimes...
Doesn't everybody, right?
Yeah. So sometimes this might drive your recommendations. You have to have the multi-view because it's the executives or whatever. So you'd have to make that as one of your recommendations. This WAN connection needs to be upgraded. This link connection between sites needs to be upgraded. Yeah. And you can see this in the bandwidth calculator. We'll show this. How you can shut these off and on.
And more... or another design point may be that while it's a requirement that executives have multi-view and it's optional for others to not, it may very well be that you have two options: upgrade your network to support the executives and others, or eliminate multi-view from everybody but the executives to support using the existing environment. Again, see, all of these things are things that you actually, there's no right or wrong, there's an overarching right or wrong answer, but the approach and your ability to take in the data, consume the data, apply the data, that's all up to the individual person writing these reports. And that's what makes this so hard.
It's an art as much as a science.
It's a very big art of how this is done. Recognizing that certain latencies between point A to point B are more than acceptable if it's between North America and the Pac Rim, yet if it was between two sites within North America, it'd be highly unacceptable. The exact same numbers. Recognizing that, looking at packet loss, understanding what you're seeing, and then analyzing it appropriately, that's where the art comes in. So the bandwidth calculator, what is it? How does it work? So this is something we download. It's free. It's an Excel spreadsheet, so it's not like we're getting a whole massive organization or system here. But what it is a spreadsheet that's designed to take the design, whether that comes from your own mind, from a current implementation, or from the planning tool, take the design with your current data that's been gathered for your current links, number of users, all that information, model it out, put it in, and get what that would take. What does it mean when I put information in?
And just briefly, what part did you write of the link bandwidth calculator?
Write or influence the QoS.
The QoS.
Okay. Yes, well, we'll get to that.
Shameless plug
from Brian. So the bandwidth calculator overview. So the bandwidth calculator has a lot of pages, a lot of tabs, a lot of information. And we'll see some of that when we go through the demo of it. But as hey, FYI, anything you see in green is stuff that we want to go ahead and put in. That's where you as a user would go ahead and type information, fill in information. If it is gray, it's going to be information that is either pulled from somewhere else or calculated. If it's yellow, it's what is the default. A good thing would be your codec and the bandwidth values of those codecs. So while we allow you to change it, typically not recommended to change them, but if there's something you know or an application that's going to run at a certain particular type or level, then maybe we do adjust it. Or maybe you know you need error correction, so you're going to bump it up, that kind of thing. And then finally, there's stuff that's red that's just information that's just there, and you can't change any of that. So in general, those are your colors, green, yellow, red, and then gray, locked cells, anything formula-based. Those are the four colors that we deal with. So we start with the personas when we're looking at the bandwidth calculator. Again, a persona is a definition of a person, how they communicate, what types of they communicate, where they communicate, and the levels of communication. All of that is defined as your persona.
It's definitely hard to see in these. We'll do that demonstration soon.
And really, this is just to give a level of reference for what we'll be looking at.
Yeah,
but from a persona perspective, again, remember that you can have 3 per site, 10 per workbook or spreadsheet, so they can have variations. They don't have to be the same 3 at every site, which is the point. They can be 10 total varied between it. If that's not enough, it may be that you're taking multiple spreadsheets and then adding values manually and bringing it all together. And it won't be as nice and pretty. You're not going to get all your graphs automatically, things of that nature. It's too bad, but that's just the way it goes. That's what that's what the tool is that we have. So when we're looking at the sites, we can see that there's 2 types of sites. We have central sites, and a central site's going to be anywhere that has a link server. And then we're going to have branch sites. And a branch site is going to be, just like in the link topology, a site that is dependent on a central site. So the branch site's going to hold communications, and you have to define who can and can't, or what site it is linked off of, I guess a better way to say it. So the branch is tied to which central site, because that's going to impact the central site's bandwidth by using the branch and vice versa. How many users are there? Do they have local PSTN breakout, for example, because that's going to move audio traffic for inner site and PSTN perhaps off the network, and so it's important to know that we're not traversing the WAN to get it back to the central site to go outbound. And then the speeds of these networks, which is what the WAN info is, right? How fast is your network, and how much of that network is available? So again, while you may see that in Phoenix, we see it's got a 200 meg link, but 100 megabits of that is available to RTC traffic. That doesn't mean we're going to use 100 megabits. It just means 50% of the bandwidth is unutilized and could be used for RTC traffic. Again, we don't want to go above 30. It's a magic number. Keep that in mind when you go to bed tonight, and or wake up in the morning and go to bed the following night, or whenever it is you put your head down, remember 30%. Burn that into your brain. It's a key number for the exam.
And we got all this information during the discovery phase. So you take that document we had earlier, you could drop it in here nice and neat.
Yeah, well, that's the theory, right?
That's the theory.
That's the theory, that we've gathered all this information, and because we've previously gathered it, now we're just...
And you've validated it. You've done that, not just discovery, you've verified and validated.
So once we define our sites and our branches that are coming off those sites, the network connections that could be potentially... or that are part of the site and what we think are the actual values. There's only so much we can do to validate. If the network team tells us 50% of the network is unutilized, well, then we have to take their word for it. We will kind of validate it ourselves when we get to the simulation phase. But at this point, we just have to take their word for it, right? Because we haven't been able to validate that. After we have all that, we move on to taking where the locations of the front ends and the WAN links go. So we want to know, again, our central sites. We know our WAN interconnection, our WAN internet connections, assuming we're in PLS and whatnot. Now we also say, do we have internet breakout? Do we have information that allows us to define that we could have PSTN reroute, perhaps, that's happening, or PSTN bypass? Things of those natures, because of local breakouts and internet, local internet, that we could theoretically put a edge server at some locations to kind of facilitate communications and not have to come back over the WAN segment. So all of that's going to be important when we're looking at this. And then again, don't remember the 30% number. We'll drill that over and over and over.
And what was that again?
30%. You should never be more than 30% of your traffic should be RTC traffic. Ever. Well, from the exams perspective, ever. There are exceptions.
And it's a good rule anyway for industry rule.
So we're going to take that traffic, and then we're going to define the branch sites. And again, the branch sites are tied to the central site. And that's important because, again, they utilize the central site's bandwidth because they're flowing back up to them to do stuff like any conferencing that's happening, any communication that is going to go out potentially the internet because they don't have local internet. They may. If they don't have PSTN breakout at all at the site, then all their PSTN calls are going outbound through the WAN as well. So we need to know all that. But if they do have PSTN breakout with media bypass, right? That doesn't do us any good to have PSTN breakout that you can't bypass because then you're actually using up double the width. We're going back up to the mediation server just to go back down out. That'd be bad. But assuming that we have media bypass capabilities at our local PSTN breakout, that's important to know. And then if all of that's set correctly, then that will tell us what our impact is on the WAN links, and what their WAN links are will be defined here as well. When we're looking for what that information gives us, so we've got all this information put in the table, what do we have? Well, it's going to tell us, well, based off the number of users, based off of the way they communicate, based off of the downward link sites of your branches, all of that rolled up means you're going to have X amount of concurrency using X amount of bandwidth. So a good example would be, there's broken out inter-site peer-to-peer audio. When we're looking at that, we're looking at how many calls do we suspect based off Erlang, which we'll get into a little bit later, based off those calculations of the number of users, the concurrency of calls, the probability that this concurrency will be where it's at, taking all that into account means you're going to have X amount of number of calls, and based off the type of call, we'll use this much network because of the codecs that are used. So all of that plays into play, and there's a lot of backwards calculations that are going on in the background to make this happen.
It's a powerful tool. I mean, does all this... It's pretty nifty.
All right. So all of that's rolled up. We can see a breakout of total utilization as well as how much of that is based off of audio, video, conferencing, app sharing. Why we want that breakout? What's possible that we say, wow, I can't believe that my remote site in Tucson, in this case, is using that much bandwidth. And then I can look and say, well, it's because we had them profiled. Their persona had X amount of desktop sharing that they were going to be doing. So maybe that site is said it doesn't support that level of networking, and we're going to actually either have to, by policy, turn it off that they no longer have app sharing, or we're going to have to upgrade that network link. I mean, it comes pretty clear and cut and dry. If the data is accurate, then this tool will tell you yay or nay. It's going to work or it's not going to work. When we take all that information, it also rolls up into additional tabs where we get aggregated results of all of the information. That's cool because the aggregated results tell us green yay or red no, where all based off the 30% model, right? So if you have enough bandwidth, but it's more than 30% of the total bandwidth, then you're going to get a warning that's saying, yes, you theoretically could do this, but it's more than what it should be from a bandwidth perspective. If you have more bandwidth requirements than you actually even physically have, then we get these big red flags saying, that's great that you want to do all of this communication. That's awesome that you want to use all the features. Yeah, it's not going to happen over a 256 kilobit link and 500 users behind it. It's just not going to happen. So It helps us know what our requirements are based off the communication models, the personas that we've built, the number of users, and the existing network with or without. If you don't know your network bandwidth, even if you put those in wrong, what happens here is these big aggregated red and greens mean nothing, right? Because they're not accurate. But it will tell you how much bandwidth is required.
How much you're going to use.
You're going to use X.
Personas, right, for your modeling.
And so it still adds value even if you don't know your current utilization on the network. So we want that so that when we get to our aggregated tables, we can say, oh, this is over or under or not going to work based off the utilization. But even if we don't have that information, we are going to know based off the personas what we would be utilizing, just not necessarily if it's available because we don't know what's currently being utilized. When we look at internet traffic, we break that out separately because it is possible based off of how you're configured, if you even have edge servers and if you have internet, which we're going to assume you do, that there's information about how much bandwidth you need at that internet breakout. So if you have internet local breakout at various sites, does that site support the ability to have users coming in via their edge server and having communication come this way? Do we support the level of conferencing and app sharing and internet, yay or nay? And the total amount of internet bandwidth that's estimated that'll be utilized based off this. And that could be because of remote users. That could be because of conferencing that's happening, audio, all the things that are happening via the edge server. So all of that AV relay impacts the amount of internet utilization you're going to be having per site, whether it's a single site or whether you have internet breakout per multiple sites. And then there's a lot of people that don't like to look at big charts like this, right? There's a lot of people that say, oh, that's an eyesore. Well, Microsoft then gives you a nice pretty chart that says, hey, let's just graphically give it to you and you can copy and paste these out and put them into your reports, pass them on to senior management that say, here are my sites, do they work? And we have additional views, not only of the branch sites and central sites and how they look, but we can also get a deployment readiness. How many of our locations are ready to go based off the internet that's provided for us? And how many of the sites are underutilized? How many are overutilized? And again, we're just giving graphical charts, whether you wish to use them or not. That's awesome. But you'll also notice that we put number of sites that exceeds 30%. The big 30% is going to flow out here again. It may not be accurate for your design. Again, keep that in play. But for the exam, 30% does matter, regardless of what you think is appropriate or not. That's the way it works. And that's what the industry standard is. The last part that we bring in from the calculations is a definition of QoS traffic. The advantage of this page or tab is that we can figure out how much data is going to be broken out on the QoS pipe for specific tagged communication. So for instance, if we're going to tag all of our real-time traffic, that'd be your audio traffic, with 46 or EF, so that's guaranteed delivery of these packets, how much of that communication is going to come from the various sites over our pipe? So if we're going to say from a branch, we guarantee, because the audio traffic is 4 megabits, do we have 4 megabits on their pipe? And more so, then we can take that, if we do, and shape the pipe and guarantee those 4 megabits. So not only do we have QoS to get the traffic there, we know how much of it needs to be guaranteed to a particular communications model. And Link can use 4 megabits. That means all of our phone calls are going to get through every time, all the time. Video may not make it. App sharing may not make it. But hey, our calls are going to get through, and that's really what's important to us. How do we know that's important? Back to the discovery phase. Business requirements defined to tell us what is key to the environment, what's key to the business, and what we need to actually be designing for. All of this, it'll always circle back. Everything is dependent on the previous phases in order to make our current phase be accurate and be successful. Now, how do we figure out this information, you ask? Well, that's a great question. There's this older guy. Well, he's dead, so he's really old. But in 1929, he passed away, Mr. Engner Kravrup Erlang. I don't know if I say that right, but it's fun to say. Kravrup.
Kravrup.
Yeah. He, in honor of him and his kind of contributions to the mathematical world of voice and how things were calculated, figured out a calculation of Erlangs. Erlang is a call in generality. An Erlang is a method to determine how many concurrent lines or how many simultaneous channels are required to prevent blocking of calls. So what that means to you is, if I have 15 lines and I have X amount of employees, let's say I have 500, how many times will those users try to make a call or try to receive a call that doesn't go through because we don't have enough channels? That's the basics of it. What is the acceptance or the acceptable rate to have a failure? And that's where we go into Erlang. So if it's not acceptable but 0.001% of the time, well, then that means your number of channels will probably have to be increased.
Definitely right. Have to increase, yeah.
Well, depending on what you have today. But we're going to, if we allow the potential for more blocked calls or failed calls not to go through, then we can reduce the numbers. That's back to a business decision. That has nothing to do with you as the consultant. It's just taking in information. Now, in the bandwidth calculator, we can play with it and look at stuff. That's all it's for, is to play with and look at stuff. From the exam perspective, it's more than playing and looking with stuff. It's figuring stuff out. So you're designing based off somebody's giving you Erlang calculations and blocking numbers. And so understanding this beyond the depths of what we discussed today is highly important from an exam perspective. Understanding, even if it's just for the moment to go take the exam, is highly important. It really is one of those things, at least for myself, that I'll wrap my head around and it'll be awesome and obvious and okay. And then I'll get pushed onto some other project and my brain will go to a different phase and we're thinking about something else. And it's like, Erlang, how did that work again? And it takes me a couple minutes to recalculate the logic of how it flows into itself. So it's not hard. It is logical. It's just the number of channels needed and required for typical environments based off blocking. You can calculate it, and we'll see that in here in the demo in just a sec on the bandwidth calculator, how that works. How do we actually increase the number of lines? Means we decrease the blocking, we increase the blocking, they correlate to one another, as well as the number of users, obviously. So a good example would be a zero blocking with 10 users, means I need 10 lines, so that I could never have a blocked line if somebody wanted to make a call. So, okay, so with that, we're going to go ahead and look at a demo of the Link Bandwidth Calculator to become a little bit more familiar with what it is we want to discuss. And really the importance here is understanding the concepts. It is probable, likely, I don't know how you want to say it, that this calculator will evolve and change and values may be different. So it's not so important as where the buttons exist and how they exist as how the ideas and functions exist, because you need to be able to evolve and apply the concepts to whatever version of this calculator that comes out. Current version being version 2, released in 2013, but it could evolve into something much more and newer. It also applies to 2010 and 2013, which is important to know. So it does require Excel. So if we open up the application with macros enabled, when we open it up, we can see that, one, this is version 2, and then this is telling us how everything works. Now there's nicely, we can follow along with go to start, go to buttons, go to here. We can see at the bottom, there's this big start here button, nice and red. That's awesome. I think we can start there as well. We're also looking at scenarios of how and why we'd use this. It's not as important as this is just a general information. So, but that's our intro page. So when we start, and if you want to do it from this methodology, we can follow along from a operation of where we would go, where we would start, and the things that we need to do. They are linkable. So if I want to go and click define my sites, it's going to take me to my define sites location. If I go back to start here and then say, okay, great, now I need to go to my view my sites, off stuff comes up. And then again, I come back and say, view the graphics, it's going to pop me there. Now, for me, that's awesome. I think it's great that they've pushed it through. And for those that have never used this, it's a great way to just read how should I be entering data. And if I've entered data, for example, when defining the WAN bandwidth and allocated RTC traffic, I can see that I can break that down and perhaps look at advanced stuff. Or as a user, I may not have this advanced information, or I may not have the information I'm going to require to make them be advanced. Therefore, I'm just going directly to my green tabs at the bottom. Remember, green's good. Green we enter. Yellow can be changed, and red don't touch. So even the tabs themselves are color-coded as such. And you can even see as the Erlang's yellow, because you can change it, but that's great. The greens are where we really want to focus on, and then the reds are going to be our results when we're done. So starting with our definitions page, we can define how we want our data to look. how we want things to be presented. Do we want to look at kilobits? Are we a big company and we're in gigabits? Are we normal and we're megabits? And when we look at these things, and again, you have your green, we can come here and change them by a simple drop-down to select which way we want to display this. Now, if we have really small pipes, then we may be 0.01 type of gigabits if we were to go up to a big level. And maybe we want to stay in kilobits. But if we're a megabits, maybe we want, you know, it really depends on
just
how you want it.
Just makes it more readable.
That's right. And you can come back here and change it on the fly, and it's just going to reflect everything. But if we're looking at our results, and we're saying, why are things being shown in kilobits, and I have 84,000 kilobits, well, maybe I want to change it to gigabits or to megabits to change the actual view to make it more consumable, as the case may be. When we look at the link traffic, it's specific to link 2010, because with 2010, we actually pick which type of codec we want. Is it SIF or VGA? We may want to be changing that. When we look at the video codecs, there could be things like, hey, do we want to say make the video codec behave at its maximum levels, or do we want to take typical? So maximums could be our worst cases, and typicals could be what you should expect things to happen. A great way to just see differences, do differences, put in the data, and then come back. This particular page, I typically come into my definitions after I've done my personas and my sites. Right? I want to see how it's going to impact and change my results of what I'm looking at. So when I come back to my personas, when we talked about what type of users we have, we can see that there's some defaults. Now, it's important to know that Microsoft has defined none, low, medium, and high as options to select. They've also created a solution that you could say, you know what, none of those fit, and so therefore, I need some custom thresholds. Now, Microsoft says use only when dealing with small sites, but maybe it's the reverse. Maybe it's whatever the case may be. If you have more accurate information than low, none, medium, and high, then probably you want to have some sort of custom thresholds that you're configuring. It's as simple as coming in and saying, you know what, this person, all they do. So a great example would be, I'm a telephone operator. I'm a call center, and so all I'm going to do is make calls, and it's always going to be peer-to-peer calls. And all I'm on the phone 100% of the time. So I'm going to put here 100% of the time I'm on a phone. 100%. That's what I do. Now, do I have more than 0%? Probably, but it's low. So now we're just going to kind of mimic our low profile, right? So maybe my low is 65%. My peer-to-peer audio is 100. My peer-to-peer video is probably no more than 10. That's great. Maybe it's 0.1, 0.01. 0.001, maybe it's higher, whatever the case may be. But the idea is at this point we can make things based off of the definitions of our models. So let me see if they can do this. Okay. So when we're looking at the custom thresholds and we're looking at things again, that's where we get to the percentages of what type of communications this person is utilizing.
And we've done, again, not to beat the dead horse, but we got this information during our discovery phase. We've determined how often the different personas use these different types of all the different modalities.
Exactly. Well, we're not making or shouldn't be making up information here. We're simply taking information that was gathered or was maybe just implied or maybe just assumed or guessed, but still the client is giving us this information and we're then taking this information and plugging it into the model. So it should be fairly straightforward. Once we define our models, right, whether we're going to use the none, low, medium, high, or maybe even customs.
And those are based off of Microsoft's research.
Yeah, right? it's data over time what they figure it out. We can then come to where we are defining people. Now you can see there's defaults, but I can type in whatever I want at this point. So this could be my San Diego office. So San Diego office users, because it's all of them in the office have a particular Link 2013 client. They are on-premise, because we could, in theory, do off-premise as well. And again, everything here is going to be dropped down so you can just select. Now, the current version of the tool doesn't support Office 365, but it's a theory.
It's coming soon.
It's coming, right? But from an on-premise, we could say, you know what, these particular people, they're not custom, but they're low, they don't really use IM. They use a lot of peer-to-peer audio, a lot of video, and then my conferencing is low and low, and they really don't do any desktop sharing. In fact, by policy, we've turned that off. And when they make calls from peer-to-peer, a lot of it's PSTN. Again, we're not 2010, so we don't care. They aren't remote, so we set this to zero. Link stereo audio is only going to come into play if we're doing Link room systems. They don't have it, so it's not an issue. We want their video quality to be at its best. If we set it to maximum, there is a function that we set on the policies within Link. When we force that, we set everything to go as big and or go home as we can. So be careful when we say that we want it to be the best. Some of this refers and relates directly to how we've configured our Link policies from our video perspective. So if we just want it to be good, we want our user's typical video to be none, and we don't want mail to view on, then perhaps that's what we want from this particular location.
And so the tool will use each one of these definitions we just set up to the custom thresholds at the top, or the thresholds at the top to do that calculation. So if it's low, it's 65% of the time that this information worker is using IM in presence.
That's right. And so then, depending on the number of users we have, we'll determine the number of percentage of concurrency, which determines the impact on the network. And it all
stay tuned. We'll show you that coming up.
So we've got our users. We've got them all defined. We've got our thresholds, custom if required. If not, then we're going to use the predefined models. We're either using the names or creating our own names. Again, we can do up to 10 here, but again, don't forget, 3 per site, that's the limit. Once we get the personas created.
And you can set the different clients there as well, 2013.
Yep, we come off to defining our sites and our branch sites. Now, this information is going to have been gathered, in theory, again, during the discovery phase, and or right in the modeling phase when we were doing the planning tool. Because maybe we don't have any information and we're just taking a swag at things, and that's where we're starting for where we're going to place servers at. That would be completely validated in our simulation phase, which is what it's for, and the picking of those locations and the probes, that's all in our sim phase as well. But in this particular phase, we're trying to figure out what central sites we have, do they have branch sites, and if they have branch sites, what's their network connectivity and their current utilization. So in this example, we're saying Phoenix has an internet site local to itself, so it has services that are able to break out on its own. It's got a 200 megabit WAN link, 100 megabit of that's available, and internet is at 100% megabit link as well. When we break that out, we could say, do we restrict audio? Do we have CAC involved? Do we not have CAC involved? But then we get to over here on the user profiles, and again, we'll see 1, 2, and 3. Now, if you get this red error, more than likely, you've changed the name of a persona on this page here. I changed SD Office users. So on this drop down, that no longer exists. So we can't have a desktop information worker. We overrode that name. So we're going to change it to SD user. And then you'll notice, oh, look, all our errors go away. How pretty. So at this Phoenix site, which wouldn't make much sense. In fact, let's do a San Diego site. With its network being in Phoenix, it doesn't have a local breakout. And its bandwidth happens to be, it's a 50 megs connection. It's pretty good. RTC traffic, though, can only have 5 megs of that because that's all that's left. That's less than 30, but that's what it is. And because it has no internet, that doesn't matter.
How many users?
So when we come here, we select San Diego as our location of office users because that's what we've defined in our persona. And of those, there are 450 users at that location. And when we do that, we'll notice that in the gray, remember gray is calculated, also flips up and says total sites is 450. Now, that may seem obvious logical, but the point is here I have mobile users are 10,000. If I set this to 5,000, that's really 5,000 plus these 5,000, another 5,000 mobile users, plus 100 admin users, and then we get 10,100. So it's adding up and doing all of our total users for us, based off this information. If we don't want that information, if we want to clear stuff out, we just need to clear all the fields and things go away. Once we have that all entered in to our definitions, we can then scroll over and notice that we are guesstimating that at any given time of our 450 users, 293 will be peak at the max number of concurrent people signed in to Link at any one time.
We defined that previously on the...
all based off of our personas, right. That how many people are using what. And the peak SIP IM bandwidth, it's irrelevant, right? When we come to the peak inter-site peer calls, we're saying 12, which means the peak inter-site peer bandwidth is 477. Now you can say, how is that possible that my peak SIP IM bandwidth, and it all comes back to what we defined as our San Diego users and how we have them. We have their IM presence so low that it's negligible. If we change these various values and we set them to high and we come back to our sites, that particular one, there's not enough users, still doesn't matter. But we'll notice the peak number of users changes because now it's a high number of users that are total within the communications. Peer-to-peer calls, again, they don't use it, so now we set it to 3, but the inner site set to 0. Inner site is going to be site-to-site. If they have their own breakout, things aren't going to be act differently than when they would otherwise. And then our WAN utilization. And again, all of these per modality like we saw in the example. Finally, we get to the big number, which everyone's looking for. What's my total bandwidth required for everything? And from a site perspective, this bandwidth is on the aggregated results because it's not a branch. When we come down, branches have information specific to how much information is being done, but the sites are all on the aggregated results. And finally, we have our QoS information we discussed. And again, that's broken down for the remote sites for their QoS, not for the local. Now here we get back down to remote, and when we looked at the internal users, now we're looking at remote users. Based off the numbers we gave and how many people are going to be remote, what's their impact, and how are things going to work? We can see here that San Diego has 5,000, has 0, London has 5,000 users, 8 megabit just for their maximum number of users and their peak SIP IM bandwidth. It can be huge because there's so many users. And when we get down to totals, you'll notice that something like Phoenix would require a 28 megabit pipe on their internet, dedicated to Microsoft Link. 20 megabit pipe, more or less, for London. And because we don't have a local internet breakout at San Diego, that's important. We're using Phoenix. So Phoenix is impacted, and their network bandwidth is impacted because San Diego's flowing their internet traffic up through Phoenix. So we wanted to see how that related or how that changed. If we came back to our definitions, and when it asks us, do we have internet and whose do we use? And we say, oh, we have our own internet. We're all good. And we have a 10 meg link. Then when we come back, isn't this fun? Playing with numbers. Calculate. Then it should have defined it. Did I hit enter? So much time, so little. Oh, that's right. Refresh. Then it impacts what the current traffic load is. We can also say if we didn't have local PSTN breakout, which wouldn't make sense, which is why it's gray here, you're a central site, you're going to have local breakout. But if I go down to a remote site, I may or may not have local breakout. They may be utilizing all the PSTN services of whoever their central site is, or they may have an SBA, SBS. They may have just a PSTN SBC of some sort, or some, I don't know, something that we can communicate with that has media bypass. Again, very important that media bypass works that way. You also notice that when we come to branches, we have the ability to put numbers of sites that work this way. If I was to change this to something like 1, so there's only a small branch site or a tiny branch site, then that's going to change and impact whoever his roll-up, in this case Phoenix, is, because will not have as many back-end communications that are flowing through it. And so when we come back over and look at our bandwidth impact, everything starts to diminish and go down. Slow down, machine. And instead of being 29 megabit, we just dropped 2 megabits off of that communication. Okay? So all of that is based off of this information. So when we go back to our aggregated results and we get all this information, this is where we're going to get yay or nays or goods or bads of what the communication is and what we're not doing. And this is really what we want to see. So why the sites information that we're building up on is important. It helps us kind of gauge if do we have the right information? Are we putting in the right numbers? Does it look accurate? Are those what we're expecting to see? Once we go to the aggregated information, that's when we're going to get the actual data all collected to what we're expecting to see. So here on our WAN link, we're saying we have a 50 meg. You've defined that. You're not doing IM, so that's not an issue. Inter-site peer bandwidth is where we get larger and greater. Let's blow this up too, so we make sure you can see this just as well. And then the bandwidth required for the various kind of communications. So if we don't have the communication as defined by our personas, as defined by our user types, then things are going to either be zeroed out or be non-applicable or not exist, right? And then the percentage of the WAN link that we're utilizing, in this case, the top two aren't utilizing WAN for their communications. They have their own local breakout. Phoenix was relying, or San Diego was relying on Phoenix, so they are going to have a percentage of the WAN that their communications are going to go over. And as long as we keep having this nice green checkbox, that means we're hitting this 30% and everything's happy-go-lucky. But if anything goes to red, we're not happy and things don't work. Again, we get our breakouts of our WAN, see our nice massive calculations at the top of things, how things are being calculated. And as we go across, we go back to what we are. And then finally, we have our graphs to show how things look, how things don't work. What's a central site? What's not a central site? As we look at San Diego, we can see what's being utilized, what's not being utilized. If they're remote sites, how much of their bandwidth is going to be required, not going to be required. And really, that's key to say, do I have more available than I have otherwise? This may get a little large and lanky, but we can see that on San Diego, the required is 477, but we have 5 megabits available. So that's a non-problem. London is not defined, he's hurting, because he's a central site and has no restrictions. When we get to the branch sites, we can see again who's being fed off who. If we have information that doesn't look right, then maybe we need to go back and look at why things are the way that things are, right? And if we come back to our sites and say, you know what, not only do I have, great example, at San Diego, not only do I have San Diego users, because they're special and defined as 450 of them, but maybe I also have, in addition, a bunch of mobile information workers that are here as well that are technically homed out of here. Now, because we do or don't have internet, this could impact stuff. Whoops, one too many. So maybe I only have 50, maybe I have 100, maybe I have 5,000. We could put in crazy numbers. Maybe I have 45,000 people out of this office. And all of a sudden, things are going to go wacky whack. And then maybe for my administrators, I have 89,000 users at this site. Well, now I have 134,000 people that are listed in San Diego. Again, some of this needs to be validated that we're making it look like the way we're going to make things look. So if it doesn't make sense, then we need to reevaluate things.
This will definitely get us some red arrows.
This should define some problems when we're saying we need 125 megabits of internet. So when we go back to our aggregated results, scroll back on over, we can see that San Diego has a 51 meg pipe. That's great. Desktop sharing alone will take 51 megabits of that traffic. For inter-site video, we're going to need 148 megabits. I mean, it's just crazy numbers, what we should expect. Because 549% of our WAN...
5,493.
Well, 549% is our total WAN. So we've overutilized our physical WAN. And when we look at total RTC, we're at 5,493%. Crazy numbers. So we know we're off. And maybe we have a miscalculated zero. But that's where we want to play with this tool. That's really the whole point of the bandwidth calculator, is to put in your numbers of validity and then say, what if? Well, what if we reduced the ability or took off this functionality or made these guys be custom? Or what if multi-view wasn't an option? Or what if they couldn't do desktop sharing at this location? Does that work? Do I get into acceptable ranges? If not, or those aren't options, then bandwidth increases is the only answer, short of the product won't work in your environment.
Turning off features. So this is the tool for user modeling.
Yes.
Yeah. You take your data you gathered for your users. You know, they use each modality this much. Then in the modeling, you define those into your different personas here. And then you take that information to the next for traffic simulations.
Going back to our graph results before we kick on over to Erlang. This is where you can get your funnies. If your RTC, your dark blue, is that much higher than your light blue, that's a bad sign. That means things aren't going to work. When we look at ready, you're not ready. Those are some sites that are overly utilized. But from this page's intent, is simply to say, from a quick view, are we ready to go based off the sites that we have? Do they meet the requirements overall from what we're looking at? And here we can see two of the sites will work too well, and we're going to go from there, and we can look at that. The final thing I want to touch on is Erlang, which we talked about. So again, this is a yellow tab. It calls out here at the very top that it's not used. None of the data that you put in here will be brought back into the rest of the data that we're doing in the bandwidth calculator. So this is more for FYI. But you can see in general, there's kind of a concept that you're looking at of either by minutes or concurrency that we're looking at. And then at the very bottom, we have our basic Erlangs. But if I wanted to say, and all I knew was, I don't know how many users are doing what, how, or why, but on my phone bill, I see that I have 25,000 minutes every month that we're paying for PSTN calls outbound, and I can put that in. Once I put that in, again, the yellow is the assumed 17% is your busy hour. If you know that to be higher or lower, you feel free to change it. It's up to you, as well as your blocking target. Is if you can accept more blocks than not, then we may potentially hear. And we can then say, oh, look, that means I have 86 lines that are going to be required. And if I change my type of communications to say I need this to be maximum G711 with error correction, that means 8 megabits of data in order to make those types of communications happen. 86 lines of concurrent communication are going to require 8.5 megabits of talk time, of network time. Now, I can also do it the other way around. Instead of saying that I don't know the total number of minutes, but the number of users I have is around 5,000, and people in general talk somewhere around 100 minutes a day, average per user in our location, then that means we're at about a 29 per concurrency, which means we have 1,446 concurrent calls with the 0.01 blocking. That's kind of high, but the idea would be that's where we're at. That's the number of lines and where we're going. And then you'll see the craziness of the bandwidth. And again, we make it a lot worse if we then go and type and say, yeah, turn error correction on. And all of a sudden, we need 232 megabits of communication. Not going to happen. But if we have 5,000 users talking 100 minutes a day with a 0.01 blocking and a 70% busy time, then that's what it is. I mean, mathematically, that's what we're working out. The one I like to say is at the very end, if I know my Erlangs and I know what my final communications are, then I can either go for my usage calculator or my basic Erlang. If I want to figure out what my blocking target is, I can go up. So if I know the number of lines, I know my blockings, what is it I'm trying to solve for? If I want to solve for the number of lines, then I could potentially be, well, I want a 0.01 Erlang blocking target, and I have 250 Erlangs that are required. Well, then I need 273 lines in order to reach that blocking target requirement. I can then take it back to where it was and put it at 0.001, and all of a sudden I need 291. And you'll notice that it's not necessarily a big jump. It doesn't always change because that's just the way that the math and the calculations kind of work themselves out. So that's Erlangs in general. And again, this is just a playing field for a lot of people. But from the exam perspective, you want to understand what an Erlang is and how it's calculated and its impact from the number of Erlangs versus the blocking target versus the concurrency in lines. That's what's important. So with that, that concludes the modeling phase. So we will look forward to talking to you guys soon. Thanks.